The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Wednesday. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing really good. How's everybody? I got no answer. So what? I guess that's,
I'm okay.
Okay, just, you know.
Yeah, I'm doing okay.
Well, we've got quite a bit to talk about today, the August primary, Tuesday results coming up here in just a couple of moments. Here's a headline. Al Sharpton may throw his hat in for 2020. Mm. That'll make it fun. That'll make it interesting.
All right.
You know, but, will the debt become a pressing issue? That's a headline out there. We haven't seen a headline out there like that in a long, long time, have we?
No.
I don't believe we have. No. So that coming up. A new poll on the media, the Manafort trial, liberal racism. Elon Musk talking about taking Tesla private, which, of course, is a nice temporary way to boost the stock.
Mm-hmm.
As the headline, I just saw the headline in the Wall Street Journal, and it really made the entire point. Who's willing to lend $70 billion
exactly
to prop up Tesla? Because right. In order to buy out all the shareholders, you'd need roughly, they say, the valuation is $70 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows if he keeps on, you know, this mindset of announcing that he wishes to do it. It may even, you know, the cost may go up further on it. And they right. make a great point. Well, who's willing to lend the money?
Yeah. He would have to have the cash to buy it out. He doesn't have the ability to do that.
Right.
I don't know where you would get the lenders for that. If he could get the lenders, if he could get that private sector funding, then he wouldn't have needed that government funding. You know, he's taken billions of dollars in taxpayer money over the years. Now, it is different now that the company is developed, and back then it was not developed. It has a brand now, but still has a, in the investment, on the investment side, there's still a ton of negatives. The fact that without that government money, he wouldn't be profitable. In fact, he's not, even with it.
Well, you know, if the prediction comes through from Jamie Dimon, most people will be investing their billions in treasury bills.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's
ten-year treasury bill, and I can get 5%. Okay,
right.
I think
exactly.
I may just pump it in there for a while.
Right. And there's, you know, we go back to these companies that, and you ask a very basic question. Is it such a great concept that the private sector is dead set on backing that concept to the point in this case of $70 billion plus? I doubt that. I could be wrong, but I doubt it.
Also coming up here, the wildfires in California. And then a big debate yesterday because, as according, the left screaming that it's climate change. And then the opposition coming up and saying, excuse me, you've got millions of dead trees that you've never cut down.
Yeah, right.
So you've left the timber there for wildfires to go crazy. So we'll get to that and more. In a primary election results yesterday, Troy Balderson, the Republican right now, with 100% of the vote in, leading by, what was it, roughly 1,700 votes?
1,754 votes
right
now is the lead. And, you know, we'll see what happens when the absentee ballots come in. This is a district that has been held by Republican going back. The last Democrat was a guy who actually held that seat before John Kasich took that seat in the 80s, early 80s. So you have to go back quite a ways.
He has called himself the victor in it. I haven't seen any official media call him the winner in it, even though 100% of the vote is
right.
But the fact is the absentee votes apparently still haven't been counted, and, you know, that's how they figure it out. Is there a possibility that the difference could be made up by O'Connor? But as of right now, he's called it. Trump has called it. So there's where we stand there in that Ohio District 12 special race. In other news, the it was big news when the president endorsed Secretary of State Chris Kobach in Kansas against the in the Republican gubernatorial primary against Governor the current Governor Jeff Collier, who assumed the office earlier this year. And at the moment, Kobach with, what, a little bit over 700-vote lead right now. That is extremely close here at the moment. Let me see the latest on that. About 807 votes, 40.8% of the vote, versus Collier with 40.5% of the vote. Last, let me see, 87% of the precincts reporting as of this moment.
So, yeah, you're looking at a difference of basically 807 right. votes in that race.
Right. So a winner has not been called in that race. And I guess, you know, if he does win, you know, the president will take credit for it. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that will create at least a little bit of political momentum and probably a positive attitude. Now, in as you mentioned, in the 12th district in Ohio, that has been for years, except for a 2-year span, held by Republicans for the longest time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bob Szymanski, the last Democrat to hold that, only held that seat for 2 years, a Democrat. And then it was Kasich for many years. And you look at the run in some of these districts where you had solid red districts, I guess, for a while. You can look at a number of these major metro areas within these districts and see how they have changed recently. I don't know how much of that's going on in Ohio, but we can talk about especially areas in red states, you know, clearly red states where you have these bluer areas that are being more concentrated, really. Dallas County in Texas, Harris County, Travis County, and you can see a number of those areas essentially being more populated. So it's those counties that are becoming more blue, deeper blue, I guess, would be the description. But then you get out into, you know, the rest of the country and you see a few of these districts that might, you know, have a turnover. We'll see where it ends up when the absentee ballots are counted there in Ohio. But the question is, what does this mean about November? What does this tell us about November, if anything? There's a ton of money going into races like the Senate race in Texas, where you have Beto O'Rourke raising millions from outside the state, from California, a ton of money going into it. We've seen that before. I think it was Georgia 6, right, where there was a ton of outside money, Hollywood money, going into that race to try and defeat the Republican. We'll see where Beto O'Rourke comes in. Ultimately, he had said he was going to reject PAC money or, you know, the PAC support. And he has not done that openly, as, you know, there is at least one PAC that has raised a bunch of money in his favor. So we'll see. And he's running up against Ted Cruz in that race.
And so you had the progressive outsider in Michigan on the Democrat side,
right,
apparently, who fell short in the Democratic primary I believe he was endorsed by Ocasio-Cortez and saw a couple of articles about what a bad day she had when it came to the endorsements. And I think all of that will be used, because it's being used already, as, you know, public relations, especially going, you know, over the next, you know, as we go into the midterms. But, there you go. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens overall. But when you look at it, even though it was a special race, any win for the Republicans, especially when you come to a midterm election, is extremely important, because traditionally you have a loss of House seats. Mm-hmm. After the 2 years of almost every president.
Right.
And so holding on to the House has to be extremely important for this administration.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, that's a good point, is that, the president's going to need all that support that he can get for the second, I guess, half of his first term, if he's going to get things like the wall. If they're going to do, anything about health care, whatever that ends up being. Interesting, Ohio 12, over 758,000, according to the 2016 headcount, live in that district, and well over 200,000. And we haven't even seen the absentee ballot numbers yet, but well over 200,000 turned up to vote. So that was a fairly healthy turnout.
It was, just so you know, in Michigan, the Ocasio-Cortez endorsement went to Abdul El Sayed, and his bid for governor fell short. He had, followed what, you know, she was doing: Medicare for all, public broadband, tuition-free college. All of that, and interesting to see that the former Senate Minority Leader Gretchen Whitmer, who got the Democratic nomination in the campaign, painted his platform as unrealistic, saying he can't win in this state with that platform.
Right.
And it's interesting that Democrats... when we get into the real world now, because now as you approach the midterms, you have to campaign more in the real world. There are some districts where you can be that outright progressive.
Mm-hmm.
But in a ton of states, even in states like Michigan that they view as a purple state, you have Democrats saying, look, it would all be great if we could do this, but we can't win.
Right.
So we have to take baby steps in order to win before we get, you know, to the big issues out there, but that's not being realistic right now, and we need a win here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Michigan still, like every state, they want to promote everything you can in terms of revenue. You want companies, more companies coming there for manufacturing. You want tourism. You want the whole thing. So you're going to have to promote capitalism to at least some degree. You're going to have to show companies that they can be profitable in that state. And given its history, you know, that is that delicate balance in a purple state, especially in 2018.
So it'll be interesting as we watch this. We're not really going to get anything else from the Ohio race, because 100% are in. And is what we have, that 100. I've seen this is from Real Clear Politics. I saw CNN, and they had it at 99% in. But Troy Balderson with a roughly a around a 1,700 vote lead, with 100% of the precincts reporting, 50.2% to O'Connor, the Democrat, 49.3% in that special election. Which again, I think at times. Look, when you look at special elections, they may be able to give you an indication of that day. But I think that when we start taking congressional districts and applying that across the board, I think that sometimes we put too much into it. Not that that it can't give you an indicator, but you know, one of the things that you and I talked about, and somebody asked me this question yesterday, what do you think is going to happen, you know, for the midterms? And I said, well, I guess, you know, it goes back to the energetic base again. I mean, if it's true,
right,
that you see some of the stats out there that only one in four millennials are going to go and vote, well, that is a huge, especially if the Republicans can keep their base motivated and Trump can keep his base motivated to get out and vote. You know, that in itself could be a huge difference.
Yeah.
You know, Trump being president, as we have said, showed that the landscape in politics has changed. You and I still, and I was having a discussion yesterday while I was getting my haircut with my stylist, and he was saying, you know, because he was talking about he was unsure of Trump and doesn't like the tweets and doesn't approve of the language, but he said the obsession with the left on that as if it's brand new. When he said they don't realize that, you know, even the people that weren't sure about Trump know that's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be focusing on that every day over and over again, he's not presidential, as my stylist told me today, falls on deaf ears.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, pretty much a given for that. I don't know. It's not silent majority, but it's the solid base, I guess. We'll see how much of that changes at the midterm, but and I know we're well into August now, but it's still, you know, months away, and a lot can happen. And by the way, we've said it, the president in communications can often be his own worst enemy.
By the way, I said stylist, barber.
Okay.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
I'd like to thank President Trump. Mr. President, coming to town, I'd also like to take the time to thank Vice President Pence for coming in next week. And the big shoes that I'll be filling. I wouldn't have got through a lot without him through this process. Congressman Pat Tiberi.
There you go. That's the Ohio 12 race in Troy. Balderson claiming victory, even though his opponent has not conceded, and I haven't seen any media outlet yet
right,
saying that he won 100% of the vote in. He's up by about 1,700 votes. Apparently, as we know, the absentee ballot still to be counted in that district.
Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE for Cobra Electronics. Here's your forecast.
Midweek weather highlights, strong high pressure continues to build in the west. Very hot temperatures expected again today. Areas from the high plains to the northeast have the potential for severe thunderstorms and heavy rain today. And there's a major hurricane, Hector, out at sea. It's expected to pass south of Hawaii. Tropical storm force winds and other impacts may affect the Big Island. And if you're traveling, look for heavy showers today along the Oklahoma-Arkansas line. The heaviest showers forecast north of I-20, south of I-40. This will include Dallas today, high of 82 with thunderstorms. Showers on 40 up through Nashville, near 90 today, the high in Music City. Rain through a good portion of eastern Kentucky, southwest Virginia into southwest Ohio, and western West Virginia. And we'll see those showers down into the Kingsport, Bristol, Johnson City area. An active day of weather in your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Thank you.
willing to have the conversation. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
Welcome and good morning. Let's call this double standard week.
Yeah, you just said that during the break. It really is double standard week this week.
We'll start with this one. President Trump's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame that was attacked, vandalized, and smashed. Now the West, this is my favorite story of the day. Now, and by the way, before you come to a conclusion on it, listen to the whole thing.
Mm.
The West Hollywood City Council has unanimously voted to remove the star entirely. They listed the reasons for the removal. They include the recording to Mr. Trump during the Access Hollywood interview. They also included actions taken as president, his zero-tolerance policy on border enforcement, and his withdrawal of the United States from the Paris Climate Accord.
Oh, of course.
God is my witness. I'm not making this up.
Yeah, yeah.
They did not vote to remove actor Kevin Spacey, who was accused of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old boy. They did not vote to remove Bill Cosby, who has been found guilty on 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault in a lawsuit brought by 60 women. And they did not remove Michael Jackson. The most important part of this story is, though, the West Hollywood resolution, this from the Daily Caller, to remove the Trump star is most likely to remain ceremonial, as the city of West Hollywood has no jurisdiction over the star.
Oh. We hereby vote to not be able to do anything.
We can't do anything, but we're going to vote to do something about something that we can't do anything about, even if we vote in a particular way.
So, this just in, West Hollywood hates Trump. Breaking news.
The jurisdiction belongs to the Los Angeles Tourist Board, and right now they are unlikely to do anything to remove that star. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, again, part of the double standard that exists today. It all really started, you know, this week. It actually started late last week, but then came into this week because it was really a Friday story of Sarah Jung of the New York Times,
right?
And her tweets out there, and you know, it's what they're basically said is that there's a couple of defenses for her, that her racist tweets, absolutely racist tweets, without question. They are acceptable because she was using that in a sarcastic way, even though there was no reference on the tweets to prove that.
Right.
She was using it in a way to fight that type of blatant racism against her.
Oh, okay.
And the other thing
fight
is...
fight racism with racism.
This is always my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
That it is impossible to be racist because if you're not part of the power structure, you can't be racist. Well, as we all know by the definition of the word racist, yes, you can. But the left has done what again? They have changed the definition of racism to fit their narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But of course it's racist. The next thing that you hear is... well, black racism or minority racism of whites is not as bad as white racism because the white racism and the history of white racism in this country created a worse situation for blacks than black racism has created for whites. Black racism of whites, for example, or minority racism of whites. Because I'll use Sarah Jung here to say that. But when you talk about that particular racism, and I thought to myself, okay, well then, are we going to start then? Let's get the moral relativism between the Holocaust and slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to get to that point now? Was the Holocaust worse because 6 million people were killed, were murdered?
Mm-hmm.
Is slavery worse than murder?
Right.
And if murder is worse than slavery, because in slavery you stay alive, so murderers, you know, and again, it depends who you talk to. I'm not getting into that type of discussion. I'm not going to make the judgment on it.
Mm-hmm.
The man upstairs can do that someday.
Right.
For the people that are involved in both of those, he will be able to make the judgment. But this is where we've gotten down to. We figure out now that, okay, well, this was worse than that. Then you have to ask the point. Well, then if the Holocaust is worse than slavery, then if you believe that your ancestors were a victim of slavery, and that and it's still the discrimination and racism still exists today, do you not have a point because the Holocaust was a greater evil?
Right. I mean, this modern changing of the, I guess, defense of their behavior as they go along, trying to justify it.
Well,
is about as laughable as it gets.
Well, then you have to ask this question then. It comes to this question. Then let's say your thought process is that white racism made in the United States made more people suffer than minority racism towards whites.
Hmm.
Then you get, and you can have that discussion. You have that discussion all day long. And you probably might be able to make a good argument and say, well, yeah, the people that actually suffer because of racism, right? Mm-hmm. So even if you take that point of view, white racism was worse because it affected more minorities and minority racism did affecting whites. Does that mean then that racism from minorities should be acceptable, or is it still wrong? What we're being told is, no, it's okay. It's mm-hmm. not wrong. Well, if it eventually leads... You know, if the thought process is wrong and it leads to evil that is wrong, and remember, it's just not committing an act, it's why you have committed that act.
Mm.
And so if you have a mindset that is evil and that mindset transforms as an individual to evil against someone else, do we judge it by the group or do we judge it by the individual and the mindset of an individual? Well, you judge things by the mindset of an individual. So doesn't matter whether a white is racist of a black person or an Asian person, or it doesn't matter whether a black person or an Asian person is racist towards a white person. If you are judging anyone, when you get to the actual mindset, they're all wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but we're being told it's not. It's okay. The New York Times is telling us it's acceptable.
Yeah, it really is. And that's the whole thing. They're changing their defense of it. You know, Facebook and the whole Farrakhan thing. Well, his anti-Semitism is okay. That doesn't violate their policy.
Right.
Look, Facebook can do whatever they want. They own it. But the question is... Is their treatment, because you could say that they represent certainly a movement, a cause, or a few. They don't represent necessarily a society as a whole. Facebook is left. There's no doubt. The organization itself, they've taken this not from a neutral point of view or position. And this is to say that, oh, that's okay. We can do that. If Mel Gibson went on a drunk rant, anti-Semitism included in his rant on Facebook, would they cancel his page? Likely so.
Well,
and I bring that up because of the Mel Gibson situation where he... According to those officers that arrested him, and he was drunk, and he went on this anti-Semitic rant, is the thought the same? Regardless of who's issuing the thought,
right?
Does it matter who is issuing the thought?
And regardless of the history of that thought, is that thought at the moment presently an evil and wrong and immoral thought, and that's the point that you have to get to. Because we know, you can use an example, what racism has done to a society, and you may be, and you can take sides and say, yes, here, now I know, and I've talked about this before, because of the horrible bigotry and prejudice, my grandfather had to leave Ontario, Canada, because of the tremendous bigotry of the Irish, the Irish Catholic in Ontario, the first part of the 20th century. My grandfather left because of that. I only found that out a couple of years ago when my dad told me. And I was completely and totally surprised. And I did the research on it and found out, oh my, I never knew that. And so, you know, in that country, it was the bigotry and the prejudice over a nationality and a religion combined.
Right.
But it was still no less that it drove my grandfather to move to a different country. My point is, it's all wrong. There may be different results through history where some races can claim greater victimhood in history in different parts of the world. But the mindset in itself is still wrong. It's still immoral. It's still evil. And that's what apparently the New York Times doesn't understand. And that's the double standard. And so you have the double standard, or you, that's why we're calling it Double Standard Week. You have it there. You have it with the Farrakhan thing, especially with the whole Alex Jones thing. People start looking and say, okay, if you're going to ban him, well, then why not him? And then him and not him. And then, as we said, what it eventually get to is the fact of the liberal thought police and liberal bigotry and liberal racism will be allowed to thrive in these quarters. And we're seeing an example of it this week. If the New York Times can get away with it, anyone can get away with
it.
If the New York Times can get away with absolute bigotry and racism and hire somebody who promotes that ideology and they make excuses for them, then Facebook will be able to get away with it. Twitter will be able to get away with it. Every organization will be able to get away with it. And liberal racism will be able to thrive. The identity politics will have grabbed hold of the Democrats and the left in this country. And liberal identity politics and bigotry and racism will thrive. That's the message, I think, that comes out of the New York Times this week with the Sarah Jung, is that it's acceptable now. It's been accepted mainstream. Racism, bigotry, and prejudice is now mainstream in the media. Tell us where we're wrong. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Tom in Anchorage, Alaska. Tom, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Tom.
Oh, thank you very much. Hi, how you doing?
Very good.
I was intrigued about your doublespeak presentation here. I just want to say that, you know, the liberal left social democrats are just doing the newspeak thing like in George Orwell's 1984. They're redefining, using their own little dictionary, the terms capitalist and market economy and conservative as dirty and disgusting and controlling, and liberal social democrat as progressive wonderful. I mean, it's just so Orwellian. It's amazing. And that when you redefine good as bad and bad as good, you know you're in the end days.
Well, when you start talking about that racist thought is justified and therefore good, as the New York Times, in my opinion, has done with Sarah, Jung, and allowing her to be part, of being a journalist and part of the editorial board, is just absolutely reprehensible, and it just shows you. It shows you the direction that they're going. Now, I don't want them to change because I think it's a very important thing, and it's up to others, including us, to explain to everybody look, this is what they're doing, and promote what they're doing so the people of America understand who runs these media companies and the things that they wish to do and the things that are at the mindset and the thought process and the bigotry and the intolerance and the racism that they are willing to promote as good.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tom. It is this. They've been redefining words for a long time. That's nothing new. But when you get into this area where you start to redefine, you know, as Tom described it, good is bad and bad is good, or conservative is automatically evil, right? It equates Nazi. If you're a conservative, you're a Nazi. Right. You can't even be a professor and or a president of a university and wish a congratulations to an old friend of the opposite party who won an election. You're a Nazi at that point.
Yep.
And you're going to get called on it.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, primary night last night in Ohio 12.
Over the next 3 months, I'm going to do everything I can to keep America great again. So that when we come back here in November, get ready, we got to come back here in November. I have earned your vote for a second time.
So that's Ohio 12, where the Republican Troy Balderson, it looks like, has eked out a victory by 1,700 votes, 100% of the vote in. Has anybody declared him the winner, or are they still waiting because of the absentee ballots?
I haven't seen any major group yet declare him a winner. Right. CNN and Wall Street Journal both saying too close to call.
And it was obvious that the Republican won because we doubt if the Democrat was up in the vote and he was declaring himself the victor that he would have said that we're making America great again.
Right.
Just a little clue.
Yeah.
but we've been talking about double standard week. And by the way, when we talk about the double standard, when we talk about the Sarah Jung, when we talk about, you know, the West Hollywood the City Council voting to remove, even though they have no power to do so, I love this. Hmm. Is this under our jurisdiction? No. Then we must vote on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything we can do about the situation? No. Then we must have a symbolic vote.
Right.
But voted to get rid of, you know, and remove the Donald Trump star. But they don't have any authority to actually do that. It's up to the tourist bureau.
What other things are they going to vote on that they have no power over?
You know, the California state legislature today votes to impeach Trump. Man, but you have no authority. It doesn't matter. It's a symbolic vote. And we're all about symbolism.
Yes. You got to make yourself feel important and useful.
I'm not just a state legislator because I got to vote on removing the president. That makes me more important. Not that they've done that.
Right.
That would be the mindset behind mm-hmm. it.
Well,
they haven't done it yet.
Did you think they were sitting around going, man, if there were just a way that we, West Hollywood, could convey the thought that we hate Trump. that's pretty much a given. But we should do something to really make it happen.
By the way, the vote was unanimous.
Of course it was.
Now, Kevin Spacey, Bill Cosby, Michael Jackson, they all stay.
Right. They're stars. They're not going to vote to.
Even though if they voted to remove them, it still wouldn't happen because it...
Yeah, still wouldn't do anything.
Right.
Still nothing. There were only a way that people could understand that we as West Hollywood hate this president.
But we,
man,
you know something, when you think about it, and you and I had this discussion in the pre-show meeting and a mid-show meeting, this is one of the things that motivated the Trump base.
Yeah.
This is one of the clear double standard, you know, that that exists out there. You think of something like, you know, you think of the, you know, Sarah Jung and the thing that she has, you know, that the New York Times is justifying, blatant bigotry and racism and hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I like, eliminationist racism.
Right.
About removing, getting rid of a race.
Right.
And the fact that they have justified it, which means they believe it's right and it's moral. Mm. But this is the kind of thing that so many people in America see, and they say, this is unacceptable. This, to me, helps motivate the base. When you have someone, and again, I mean, how widely known Candace Owen is, I know who she is, Charles Kirk, I know who he is, but Candace Owen has been more on Fox News. But when you see, for example, there she is, and... and this was a discussion yesterday on social media, and you see an all-white group screaming at a black woman, stop white supremacy.
Yeah.
It gets to the point of,
wow.
You know, this is what, it's what helps motivate the other side. These are some of the, no, and I think politically this is an important thing to bring up.
Yeah.
Because it did motivate the 2016 election.
Well, and it's gone to absurd levels. I mean, it really, it's so much further than it was in 2016. Trump didn't cause this. Trump was the result of this behavior.
Right. I agree.
America was done with this kind of nonsense. And
apparently not.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, is that, oh, man, that didn't work. What do we do? We'll do more. That's the answer.
Yeah, it failed us.
Ramp it up.
It failed us in 2016, and we need to reevaluate. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that?
No, okay, that happened. It was like 10 seconds. Somebody at the New York Times basically was sitting at their keyboard while eating a sandwich at lunch going, you know, we probably need to get out of the city limits a little bit more. And then they fell asleep, you know, because they got, drowsy after a sandwich like I get. And then they woke up going, oh, okay, let's start bashing Trump again. I mean, it lasted for just a few seconds. We need to have a better understanding of the heartland and the folks. Yeah, look, a pair of coveralls ain't going to get it. Sorry, that's not going to do the trick.
I think I'll start watching reruns of Green Acres.
Exactly.
And I'll be able to relate. Boy,
I do get allergic smelling hay.
Mr. Haney is quite manipulative. See, that's the bad in capitalism, Mr. Haney.
Mr. Douglas. And there's the problem.
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, I have to qualify this.
What?
For anybody under the age of 60.
Yeah.
Green Acres was a show in the 60s.
It's just insane. But that doesn't matter. You know, you think of the basic, okay. You're gonna sit down with a 27-year-old who just rose to fame by, well, getting a video to go viral, Ocasio-Cortez. You're gonna lay down the very basic political playbook. Everybody's gonna want you on. All right, Ms. Cortez, here's what you need to do. Here's the things you need to go on and repeat. And if they ask a question, go back to these things and then start repeating them. Don't go too deep just yet. These basic ideas of building this emotion, because this is what they've been trying. The left has been doing this for years. You know, people, the poor are suffering while the rich get richer, building this envy and jealousy. And politically, that has worked for them.
Right.
So get some very basic things that you want to promote. You would think that it wouldn't even require someone to sit down with Ocasio-Cortez that she would go, you know, I should probably Google something before I sit down with Trevor Noah.
I should have. And, I guess.
Yeah.
What did Steve Martin sing in Plane, Trains, and Automobiles? You should have a point.
You should have a point.
For anybody under 50, yeah. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was a movie in the late 80s.
It was a great movie, but yeah. So that basic, I guess, going back to the instinct for political survival in this case, still isn't there.
You know, when we look at the, because we've talked about the Democrats and issues, and you think about it, and we studying Occupy Wall Street, the biggest thing that really came out of Occupy Wall Street was, and remember, it wasn't even, well, we have to stop, because remember, originally it was, we need to stop supporting the big banks, we need to go to the small banks. I remember when they needed to finance it and have their own checking account, they went to the bigger bank.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
But it didn't even end up being that. The only thing that really stuck out of Occupy Wall Street was college students got screwed by their colleges and took out loans, and the colleges promised them a great career, and the colleges did not deliver because what they took, they could not find a job, therefore they are left with all this debt. Therefore, the banks should forgive their loans because of what the college did.
Yeah.
Really, seriously.
That's it.
That's really, to me, the only thing that really stuck out of Occupy Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then what did Bernie Sanders run on? The billionaire screwed you over, the college student. You should get free college. That's what it was.
Yep.
Remember you and I sitting here one night talking to the young lady who called us who went to UCLA. Who said somebody needs to pay for her college. And we said, why? Well, because it should be that way.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, and she wasn't pleased with our response that life doesn't always hand you exactly what you wish it to give you.
And the things that have the greatest value, you have to earn.
Right.
You have to do the work. You know, not that a scholarship is bad, but the idea that someone, that it should be free. And by the way, when you earn a scholarship, that's not free. That's earned. So when you look at the entire equation, how would the market judge if we went to free college for all? The market's going to look at that as, okay, it's an extension of high school. Basically, public colleges, you would turn it into that kind of situation, right? So it wouldn't be long before the market would judge that as, all right, well, they stayed for another 4 years, but that really doesn't tell me much about the person. That really doesn't tell me much about their drive. Were they willing to go out and really work for that education? You know, were they willing to go out and put in that work to earn it? That's how the market judges you essentially as a commodity. And that's what you are when you enter the workforce. You're going to bring some kind of value. And if you don't have that experience, and coming out of college, you have very little experience because of your age and also because of the fact that, well, you've been a full-time student for the last 4 years. At least, and that's where those employers start. And you can say it's wrong. Doesn't matter. We don't get to set that. Those industries and businesses are trying to bring the best people to bring the best value to their company to be the most productive for their company.
Well, and
And that's what it comes,
no,
comes
I think,
down to.
I think you've hit on a great point, you know, and the mindset that we talk about of so many Democrats and people on the left, which is society has to adapt to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. It
doesn't work that way.
You have to adapt to society.
Right.
You have to adapt for what the demand is out there. And there is this expectation, no, that society will adapt. It will, number one, take care of me and then adapt to me and embrace me as a productive person, irrespective of whether I bring productive traits,
right,
a productive work ethic, and actually bring the reality of productivity to their company.
Right.
That it doesn't matter. They need to embrace me. It doesn't
work
that way. It'd be great if it did.
No, look, I look at my adult children and I say to, you know, myself, man, if the world only understood, you know, how great they are and what they could do for it. But it doesn't work that way as a parent. You know, I'm not delusional, not in that sense anyway. It is not the situation where I think that the world is going to hire them because the world should automatically know how great they are. Man, if that could work, parenting would be much, much easier.
See,
but the world doesn't work that way.
I'm much more realistic. I wouldn't hire anybody in my family.
All right. Exactly. All right, all you people, you're fired.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, finding available loads is easier than ever with the app from DrayNow. Mike Albert is the CEO of DrayNow and has more.
Well, we started DrayNow to give them access to freight that is a niche in the transportation industry that usually truckers aren't very familiar with. Typically, in the intermodal industry, truckers don't have visibility or access to this type of freight. Drivers choose what they want, when they want, to suit their personal lives. We really focus on short-haul movements. Our average haul may be 140 to 150 miles. We give them localized freight they can choose every day. They can do one, two, or even three loads in a day, where most load boards don't have that. The days of drivers talking about gross revenue really need to become a thing of the past, in my opinion. It's okay making $4,000 or $5,000 of gross revenue a week and using less fuel. It's more about what you put in your pocket. We have a simple vetting process where carriers enroll with us. Once they do that, they have access to the freight. There's no cost to the app. Go to our website, which is www.draynow.com, and click on the carrier tab. That actually starts the process.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. We go to Spencer in Atlanta. We've been talking about this. We're calling it Double Standard Week. Hi, Spencer. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
What's going on, guys? How are y'all?
Good. How are you?
Hey, it's good to hear you. I actually work over at WYAY in Atlanta. I'm just getting off work from my DJing gig, and I always listen to you guys on the way home, and I always enjoy it. But I liked what you mentioned earlier concerning, you know, this whole deal with what's going on with the kind of the left and the way that it's the young leftists. You know, it's not like my parents. My parents are liberals, but you know, it's this. I'm a millennial, a cusp millennial. I'm 81, and everyone younger than me that's liberal, they behave this way, and I see it happening all the time around me, and I think it's been the greatest thing in the world to see this happen, because Obama was elected, you know, and I think it's like you guys said, this nonsense went away when Obama got elected. Mm. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, and I didn't hear about any of this kind of stuff going on, until Trump got elected. And it's basically, they've been exposed, in my opinion, for what they really are, because Hillary was supposed to win. I mean,
right.
Hillary was supposed to win.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama was elected. Now we were going to get our female liberal president. Mm. It's supposed to happen. And it's like you guys said, you know, just a minute ago before the break, how it seems like society is supposed to adapt to us, which is not right. That's not correct at all. And I think they do think that way.
And it's just, it's just not reality. But you bring up a great point, Spencer, and thanks so much for calling that. You know, when Obama was elected, remember, we're in the post, he's a post-racial president,
right.
That racism will be going away.
Yeah.
And we all chuckled at that when we said no, because racism will always be used as an excuse, because a lot of racism is driven, you know, we aren't the most racist country. We always say that it's the most racist society it's ever been. No, it isn't. That's ridiculous. Envy and jealousy is what really lead, but racist statements are made. Mm. And Sarah Jung made a ton of totally, completely racist statements that now are justified by the New York Times.
Are always working. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. I mean, the last caller bringing up, and it's a point that we made before, but it's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just been, there's been an expectation. I think, which probably a lot of parents filled their kids' heads with, that because where do you learn these things? Most of what I learned a lot of stuff in school, but most of the things I learned from my parents.
Right.
You know, how the world really is. I mean, they're the ones that really
yeah.
you know, told me. And you know, we've talked about this before when and I brought this up yesterday to a couple of people. I said, you know, when my dad at 14 told me, by the way, you're going to find out as you get older that people actually love to be BS'd. And the more smooth-talking the BS is, the more people accept it. And I said, no, as the young idealist I was, I said, no, Dad, you're completely wrong. Completely wrong. And no way. You know, people.
Dad, you're wrong about everything.
You're wrong about and now I tell him, Dad, my dad being 92 years of age now, Dad, you were right. Big smile.
Right.
But the other thing was, I'll never forget, it was a huge moment, but it was also a very challenging moment, because I thought to myself, when I was 13, 14 years old and my dad told me this, I said, come on. I mean, that's not right. And it was my dad telling me, look, where society is going, you're not going to be able to hold on to a job in all likelihood for 15 years.
Right.
You've got to be good at three or four different things. You can't be good at just one thing.
Right.
You need to be good at three or four and proficient or three or four different things so you can work at three or four different things in industry, in business, once you get into the job market.
Yeah.
Well, as a 13, 14-year-old, I'm like, what the hell is that?
Mm.
What, are you crazy?
Mm.
That's too much. You can't expect that out of a human, you know, out of a human being, right? I mean,
right.
That's the first thing.
Yeah.
You're a young kid going, oh, I just, you know, good God, I'm school's tough as it is. You know, I hate my teachers. I hate my courses. Girls don't pay attention to me. Well, there's been one consistent in my life. I mean, that's a thought that going through
yeah.
your mind.
Yeah.
And, but it's like when you've got your father, you know, look, you got to be good, and you can be good at three or four different things. You can do it.
Right.
And, it ended up that when I looked back at my career, everything from, you know, banking to, you know, management. It was management of a radio station, but, you know, but then sales, being a machinist, being a steel worker, all those different things actually that I viewed as a 13 and 14 year old as a, oh, by the way, being a janitor, cleaning toilets, that when you look at it and that's thrown upon you when you're young, and if it's done as a, if it's done in the philosophy of you're doomed, you're never going to make it
mm-hmm.
because you got to be good at three or four different things, well, that's not the right way to do it.
But you are doomed, just to be clear.
But that the right way is to encourage, say, look, you can be good at a variety of different things, but if you really want to advance, you've got to be able to multitask, and that's in your own career. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to multitask the things that you can do, and what you, as my dad told me, you've got to be able to offer these people something.
Right.
It wasn't them offering me something.
Right.
It eventually got to that point. But the only reason they offered me something is because they knew I could offer them something. People hire you because you can make their life easier. They don't hire you so they can make your life easier.
Yeah, that's basically what it comes down to. What is it that you can offer, and how is it that I determine as an employer your worth, your value? And they've got to see that, you know, that you're driven, that and it goes far beyond the education. It sometimes goes beyond the experience.
And so that was the message that I got when I was young. And so we had talked about this during Bernie Sanders' campaign. And we said, what a horrendous for as much as Bernie is loved by the millennials, mm-hmm. he's loved because he assigned to them victim status. Think about that.
Right.
I don't know. How do you get to that mindset where somebody says you're a victim and you're like, I love you?
Right.
I wouldn't want anybody to ever tell me that I'm a victim. You're a victim and you can't make it. You're a victim of the billionaires. Number one, I'd laugh because logic tells me that I, as an individual, I'm not affected by anybody else out there. 99% of what will affect me in my life will be my choices and my decisions
yep.
and my behavior and my work ethic.
And 99% of the roads out when something happens to you that's not in your control will be about the choices you make to get out.
Right. And so when Bernie went around and we talked about how reprehensible it is, how immoral it is for the left and the Democrats to be telling young people, the deck is stacked against you. You can't make it unless we are there to help you because you're being oppressed by those people over there.
Yeah.
Okay, we found them. It took us a little while, but we found them. Look, that's political manipulation. That's all it is. You control your life. Bernie Sanders cannot save you. Hillary Clinton cannot save you. Donald Trump can't save you. You are the only one who really can save you. You are the one that determines where you're going to go in life, not the president of the United States, not a federal politician, not a congressman, not a senator, not somebody locally in City Hall. You. But the fact is, the message that comes from the left is young people can't make it. You're a victim. That's what Bernie Sanders sold.
Yeah.
You're a victim. That's what came out of Occupy Wall Street.
Right.
You're a victim of the colleges that you went to.
Well, here's this false security blanket in place that the left has been using for how long now? I'm going to do something to change all this. You won't have to worry about your college loan. You won't have to worry about your health care costs.
Well, yeah, you're going to. You're going to have to worry about it.
There's no way to pay for a fraction of what they're trying to sell you.
No.
There's no way. Not going to happen.
And we were told during Occupy Wall Street, which then evolved into the Bernie Sanders campaign, that, you know, I can't believe it. The college told me that if I got a degree in art history, I could make a ton of money. And you know something? I couldn't. So the big bad banks are responsible for what the college told me and me not using my common sense along with my parents to say, are there jobs really in art history out
mm-hmm.
there? It's not my fault. It's not my parents' advice. It's the people who financed it. The banks are at fault. Not even the college. The banks are at fault. Looking and searching for a victim to justify my victimhood. Number one, what a terrible place to be as a human being. I would hate to be in that place where I actually believed that someone else controlled where I'm going to end up in life.
And the left has been conditioning young people to wake up every day and find their oppressor. You know, I used to say, wake up and be a victim. But really what they're doing is they're looking for the oppressor. And if you're on the left, don't worry, get in line, you're the next oppressor.
Right, and that's what we found out. Starbucks found that out.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get to be an oppressor? We were
writing things on cups.
We
I mean, we did real things. It was do you know what we went through writing things on cups? We did that before anybody was writing on cups.
Yeah, I mean, I got my coffee cup. It said race on it. And I looked and I said, well, doesn't seem like you're racing to me. You're really pretty slow in delivering this cup of coffee to me.
Are we talking NASCAR? Yeah. I don't know what y'all want to talk about.
Well, they were the savior of Western, Howard Schultz and Starbucks, the savior of Western civilization. Now they went from that to the oppressor.
They saved the world by writing something on a cup. And then all of a sudden, Howard Schultz, I gotta go. You know, I mean, that's how quickly it happens in today's world.
By the way, I've heard it toned down about him running for president.
Yeah. Yeah, people, you should drink the decaf when it, you know, calm down about that, because we're not there yet. And honestly, he's probably, and he said it after, I think it was just before his time was up there at Starbucks, and he was like, you know, Democrats really got to stop with all the identity politics. He is totally not going to be the next candidate. Well, good thing you made some money as a CEO. But that's where it is. Wake up every day, find your oppressor. And that oppressor could be somebody who was with you yesterday, and now you can look at them differently. You know, it's funny because when all the talk on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and I thought, you know, the leftist mindset, no, you can't adore people. You've got to hate people. You can't go up and, you know, walk up to a star and go, oh, look, that's something. No. And today's, you got to find all of those stars of the people that you hate, and you pretty much eventually are going to hate them all. And that's what it comes down to. Find a reason to hate them.
Well, that's a great point. Our goal is to eventually hate everyone.
All of
because
you.
Everyone will eventually become an oppressor.
Well,
or everyone's faults.
Yes.
Because we're all human beings.
Right.
Everyone's faults will be unforgivable.
Unacceptable and unforgivable.
Unacceptable and unforgivable.
Yes.
Because we must be perfect.
Well, that's it. This is why artificial intelligence is going to take over the world. Yeah, listen to me. I'll be back in just a minute. I'm going to go and I'm going to shine my Hollywood Walk of Fame star.
Now that you did say that, I did see the thing that the headline in the Drudge Report, sex robots. Women say you can't tell the difference. I didn't read the story. It was just the headline.
Yeah. And I was about to say, I'm not going to touch that one, but that probably would be inappropriate, so I'm not going to say that.
Thank you for not saying
it. Okay. You're welcome for me not saying that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Is Eric Hurley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Will the debt become a pressing issue? Details on that coming up here in a little bit. Plus, a new poll on the media and Elon Musk talking about taking Tesla private.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right now, he'd need to borrow $70 billion to do that.
Right.
It is a way to temporarily boost up the stock.
Yeah, you boost the stock because those people think that they're, you know, those investors believe they're going to get, you know, that buyout, so they get into that stock and know that there's going to be others that jump on the same thing. That's going to be short lived because he's likely not going to be able to get that $70 billion. If he does, I don't know who the investors are going to be. We'll see.
And again, I wish that I could watch the Manafort trial on TV.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because there's only so much you can tell from the reporting. Now,
right.
I know Gates was on the stand yesterday and being pummeled, you know, trying to destroy his credibility, which would be key here.
Yes. That's what you have to do. Because
if, you know, and I sometimes you can get an idea if you're watching it by the facial expressions, because at that point you can put yourself in the chair of a juror. Do they buy it or do they not buy it? Do they view him as a credible witness? And if he is the guy that is saying that he and Manafort broke the law, well, is it credible and does it match up specifically, you know, with all the evidence that the prosecutors have? And I don't know. I honestly, I can't tell you.
Well, and that's what it, this, I think, is going to come down to. And I think there's with some of the documentation that they have, if that is really strong evidence of, you know, whatever it is, tax evasion or bank fraud or any of those charges, there's a total of, what, 32 charges here, then it's a decent chance, even if only, you know, a handful of those stick, that the Mueller team gets a win. But this is, again, we have to repeat this, has nothing to do with the election of 2016. And that's where, you know, the left right. media wants it to be related to the election, but it's not.
Well, maybe I wouldn't be, I guess, I'd still be paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the uniqueness of this judge, Ellis, has made this trial just fascinating.
Well, because and what I respect about his approach here is really reining in the Mueller team, saying, "Look, you're putting all of this, essentially assigning when they were using the word oligarchs, you're assigning something to it, this negative and possibly criminal connotation." He goes, "I don't know who these people are, but right now they're just people, rich people who have influence. So, gosh, Bill Gates, Buffett, Soros, the Koch brothers in the States, that could all apply, but that doesn't make them criminals."
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, with training camp well underway, it's time for our football update.
Okay.
Now, what do you think I'm going to talk about? Not kneeling.
Stretch the length of the field to 110 yards.
No, not. We don't want to become the Canadian Football League here.
Mm.
No. Breaking news.
Yeah.
History will be made this year in the NFL with the first male cheerleaders.
Boo.
The Los Angeles Rams and the New Orleans Saints will have male cheerleaders dancing on their squads for the first time.
Okay.
Dancers Quentin Perrone and Napoleon Jennings have been preparing for the NFL season since they made the Rams cheerleading squad in March.
All right.
Still can't believe I'm one of the first males in history to be a pro NFL cheerleader, Jennings tweeted after being selected.
Okay.
Other teams like the Indianapolis Colts and the Baltimore Ravens have stuntmen. But USA Today reported the two men, Perrone and Jennings, will be dancing alongside their female teammates and doing the same moves.
Oh, okay. All right.
So there you go. Meanwhile, the my team, no cheerleaders.
Have the Bills ever had a cheerleading squad?
Yes, they did at one time.
Did they all just quit?
The Jills.
Really?
No.
That was the name, the Jills?
Yes, the Jills.
Okay. All right.
And they used to, when the team first formed, I mean, going back to the 60s, they were all had to be married.
They did? That was a requirement?
Yes, they were all married.
Like a prearranged kind of, like, you made the squad, now we're going to have to marry you with someone?
With the player.
That was a requirement.
They pre-selected a player to marry you.
Okay. Well, all right. It's weird, but okay.
I forgot how many years ago it was, 20 years ago, the Bills no longer were over the cheerleaders. There was a separate organization.
Oh.
That ran the cheerleaders and other cheerleaders across the country. That the teams themselves weren't involved in it. They, you know, it was basically subcontracted, and the cheerleaders sued labor laws for not being paid minimum wage and having to do things for free in order to be cheerleaders. They sued, and the Bills said, this is going back about 5 years ago. I don't even know if the lawsuit has been completed yet, but they sued, and the Bills and a few other teams got out of it. Said, sorry, no more cheerleaders. We're done with that. You know.
Yeah.
And now there's nothing to watch on the football field for them.
That was the only thing to watch.
Yeah. So
for the Bills.
You know, I did see a story that the Philadelphia Eagles are still undecided as whether to kneel or not.
Okay. Well. All right. You saw there was a story where a restaurant bar in Florida canceled their NFL ticket. Well, I still haven't figured out why that was a story. I would assume that a number of those bars across the nation either, you know, canceled their ticket, NFL ticket for one reason or another. I don't know. Maybe they're the first in the country to cancel their NFL ticket, but they did so and said, you know, we're going to save hundreds of dollars a year. And with that, we're going to offer savings for veterans on Sunday. They can get discounts. Veterans can get discounts on Sunday now when they come in. And that's how we'll use those savings. But I'm guessing it's just a promotion thing.
Well,
if you're a sports bar, though,
yeah,
you pretty much have to have the screens on.
Well, if you're a sports bar and you say we're not going to cover NFL football, that's a problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might want to change your theme. I mean, because what else are you going to do in the winter?
Here it is from RealClearLife.com.
Mm-hmm.
Eagle players undecided about kneeling for national anthem during the preseason. There's a very important reason here, though, for the Eagles. And they write the first before the first game of the preseason, the Bears and Ravens stood for the national anthem. Yeah. However, that was just one game on Thursday night. This Thursday night, tomorrow, a full set of preseason games will kick off, and what NFL players decide to do. Has not yet been decided. That's at least according to Malcolm Jenkins and Michael Bennett of the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles. And now that Bennett is with the Eagles, remember, he was one of the catalysts, Michael Bennett, for the kneeling last year. Remember?
Right. Yeah.
He lied about the Las Vegas cops, got sympathy. If you don't remember it, there was a call that the Las Vegas police took at a casino for an active shooter. And when they came in, they told everybody to get down. You get down. You lay down. Don't move because there's an active shooter in here somewhere. Bennett gets up and runs. So naturally, the police chase him. And what does he say? He comes out with a statement that the Las Vegas police went after him and detained him because he was black. And what we found out afterwards was Michael Bennett of the Philadelphia Eagles lied about the Las Vegas police. But before the Las Vegas police came out with the video showing that Michael Bennett had lied, He got sympathy and became one of the catalysts for the kneeling last year.
Mm.
I'm not sure yet, Jenkins told Philly.com. I honestly haven't thought about it. Bennett was a little more vague and didn't directly answer when asked if he was going to protest.
You think that that message, because we floated this idea or possibility, I guess, that the Players Association has quietly floated that message to the players. Hey,
we've
got to be done with this because it's going to affect contracts.
Though he didn't divulge his plans for the anthem, Jenkins did hint the Players Coalition, a group he found, which he helped found, which works on social reforms within the community, might release an op-ed piece about the anthem conundrum today.
Yeah.
Whether they protest or not, Jenkins think players have started to realize the power that they hold. Guys have been very active. Guys are starting to find different avenues, different ways that they can contribute. Different ways outside of kneeling. People are beginning to see this as bigger than just 2 minutes of the national anthem. I'm telling you, that's my theory, is that the NFL Players Association have tried to figure a way of, we've got to promote that, okay, it's bigger. We have found new avenues and better avenues to protest here than the national anthem. And I bet you, I've told you, eventually this would come down to money. They've got three seasons to go, and then they've got a new contract coming up. They told the players last year, as we have repeated over the last year, that you better start saving money now, because the reason we didn't get the contract we think we should have gotten is because so many of you players didn't save money and you felt pressure to deal with the NFL. And now, with 2 years in a row of decreasing television ratings, down 17% on the national scale, we can't have a third year.
Right.
I just believe, and the reason I believe this is because Kim Pegula of the Bills, the owner of the Bills, she came out.
She was the first one,
She was the first one that said...
During the offseason.
Yeah, we've been talking to, very vague, but saying we've been talking to a lot of the players about, the consequences of all this, and there were a lot of things that they didn't realize.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're an owner and you're talking to a player, what are the things that they didn't realize?
Hmm.
That people didn't like it? No, the players realized that. What the players might not have realized is that this is going to affect your bottom line in a couple of years. You're not going to be able to make the money if television ratings go down. That's still the major source of funding for NFL teams.
Right.
And if ratings go down, then you will. And remember, here's the whole point. The NFL last time, they made the deal, what was it, 2011?
Yeah.
It goes to what? 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 10 years. And so the 10 years is based on what? The projection of what happened the previous 10 years of television ratings going up, merchandising ratings going up, ticket prices going up, new stadiums being built in.
Strong and steady growth.
Seat licenses. Growth, 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 growth. And all of a sudden you're going to walk into a contract in 2021 and you've had 5 years or 6 years of growth, which has gone in the negative direction, and then you want another contract for the next 10 years, well, it's not going to accelerate. And I've always said, the NFL and the majority of the players might like the symbolism of protesting. It might make them feel good until they realize it's going to hurt their bottom line, that they have to understand that there are consequences for their action in the free market. And so when they're saying guys have been very active, guys are starting to find different venues, different ways that they contribute. People are beginning to see this as bigger than just the 2 minutes before the national
anthem.
It's a nice way to get out of it, isn't it?
Exactly.
And so you and I are wondering, might this thing just disappear? Is the NFL Players Association telling them, guys, this is going to affect your contract? There are other ways to do it. Let's come up with a strategy. Let's say that, let's say exactly what Jenkins is saying. People are getting to see this is bigger than just the 2 minutes before the, the 2 minutes, that was a dumb way to protest. There are much bigger things that we can do.
You mean like do it somewhere else? What people were saying the whole time?
Yes.
What the fans were saying? I don't care what you do off the field. I really don't. What you're doing off the field, really, that's That's up to you.
Well, when I read this article, I went, wow, I was thinking, because you and I were thinking there's no way that they can come up. There's no way they can compromise with what the NFL had come up with originally.
Right.
What's the only way out? And we said, how does NFL Players Association come out and pretend, market the fact that we didn't give up anything. We chose that we were going to move in a different direction because we have made our... We've made our opinion known now, and they can save face and say it is time for us to move in a direction which is much a greater direction of how to get things done.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you realize it's going to affect your bottom line. It's going to affect contract negotiations. And the NFL Players Association and their reps and their leaders could say 2 years ago, we stand by our players until it's going to affect the bottom line, which then we'll be out of jobs if we can't get these guys raises.
Yep.
Said it from the very beginning. What will solve this? In all likelihood, money.
Yeah. That's what it always comes down to.
And so I wonder if nobody's going to say anything. It's just the word is out. This isn't the way we're going to do it anymore. And with Jenkins saying that, you know, I'm thinking to myself, that's how you save face. That's how you claim
we're going on to something bigger.
We were victorious over Trump.
Yes. Yeah, they can claim victory. Okay, fine. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see how, by the way, let's see if that works.
And we don't know. We'll know
Thursday. I'm anxious to see if the fans are going to come back.
Well, we'll see Thursday whether, you know, because if they all stand Thursday,
specifically the Eagles, you mean?
Well, no, everybody. Yeah. If everybody on Thursday and this weekend stand, because everybody's playing this week. Mm-hmm. So if everybody plays this weekend, everybody stands, then I would say that message has been made very clear. Because remember, 2 months ago, players are going to go on strike for the entire year.
Well, to get, 2 weeks into preseason, we go through, a few rounds of games and not have one kneeling.
Then
that will be a tell.
Then you'll know.
Unless it's that one that knows he's not going to get signed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I need my 5 minutes of fame.
Exactly.
I'm not going to get signed, so...
I can claim I'm a victim when I don't get signed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
86 and then sue.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90 Red Eye. So we'll see, Eric, whether our theory that we came up with the other day, and it just sort of popped into our heads, where it was like, well, wait a minute. Nobody kneeled last week, and if nobody kneels this week, then is it a don't ask, don't tell type of situation where it's not the owners and the NFL, Players Association coming up with something. It's just the NFL Players Association telling the players, don't kneel.
Yeah.
And let's just say, as the Philadelphia Eagles seem to be saying in their one of their reps, that, this is bigger than just 2 minutes before the game. And we're finding different avenues where there's more successes. And you walk out and you save face, and the owners haven't ordered you to do anything. You all have made a decision because your past, you've moved on to greater ways to protest than the national anthem, and you have won, and Trump has lost. And that will be the narrative that they'll go with, and then everybody will stand, and nobody's been forced to stand. They save face, and then the NFL goes on.
The NFL doesn't have to create its own league rule. They just create a new rule called capitalism.
Yes. The free market.
Yes. This breaking news, the NFL has created a rule for its players and protesters, which will apply to everyone. It's called capitalism.
Yes. But politics and economics combined still is decided by incentive and disincentives.
Yes. So you can do it. That's fine.
Well, and it'd be don't ask, don't tell. That the NFLPA, well, it's okay if you wish to stay in the locker room, but it's not an official policy. And right. The team isn't going to say that anything. You do basically what you want.
You're not going to be punished for it. There's not going to be any.
It's the don't ask, don't tell for kneeling.
Yeah.
That it's just the NFLPA telling them, this is about our contract.
Mm-hmm.
This is about money.
Right.
There is no it's all disincentive to kneel now.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's pretty much, you know, the free market at work, as it always is.
If that happens, and we don't know. Yeah. We don't know if there are going to be players.
Well, eventually we do know what will happen with the money.
Yes.
You know, if it continues. If they continue to lose viewers for any reason, every reason.
This is just a theory that might be, and our theory will be emboldened if they all stand.
Right.
If every team and every person.
Not one person kneels over the next week or so. 866-90-RED-EYE for Video Road Log. Here is your forecast.
Midweek weather highlights strong high pressure continues to build in the west. Very hot temperatures expected again today. Areas from the high plains to the northeast have the potential for severe thunderstorms and heavy rain today. And there's a major hurricane, Hector, out at sea. It's expected to pass south of Hawaii. Tropical storm force winds and other impacts may affect the Big Island. And if you're traveling, look for heavy showers today along the Oklahoma-Arkansas line. The heaviest showers forecast north of I-20, south of I-40. This will include Dallas today, high of 82 with thunderstorms. Showers on 40 up through Nashville, near 90 today, the high in Music City. Rain through a good portion of eastern Kentucky, southwest Virginia into southwest Ohio, and western West Virginia. And we'll see those showers down into the Kingsport, Bristol, Johnson City area. An active day of weather in your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
And the drinking game continues. Eric Hurley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning. I'm just reading a bunch of stuff here.
Yeah.
The show's interrupting my reading.
Yeah. What are you reading about?
Well, this Mediate.com, Mediate, whatever they call it, liberal Twitter blasts Green Party voters over Ohio 12 results. You're worse than a Trump supporter.
You know what's funny is that we came in and we were looking at Ohio 12, and I was looking at the Green Party candidate Manchik, and I said, if not for that Green Party candidate, then because it was roughly 1,100 votes that Manchik got, and the difference right now is that. It's about 1,700 vote difference right now. They're still counting the absentee ballots, we believe, and I've seen no one declaring officially calling that race yet. But I said that out loud because
it
happens.
Yeah.
You know, it happens pretty much with every close race. Well, if not for that third candidate. Okay, get over it. You know there's going to be someone.
If not for the reality of the election and the candidates in it, we could have won.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
But here it is. Liberals are absolutely livid at the Green Party and its voters in the wake of the razor-sharp special election results in the Ohio congressional race. Republican Troy Balderson has already declared victory over Democratic candidate Danny O'Connor as the margin is less than 1%, 50.2 to 49.3. However, Green Party candidate Joe Manchik received 0.6% of the vote. Over 1,100 voters still would not have made a difference at this point.
No.
As we have said.
Right.
And because of his participation in such a highly contested race, liberals are blasting his party and anyone who voted for him, so much so that the Green Party began trending on Twitter.
Really? Are you kidding me?
Wow. Dear, here's one tweet. Dear Green Party, can you please wait to make your symbolic votes at a time when our government isn't being overrun by white supremacists?
Yeah. Okay.
Alyssa Milano, of course, she has to get in. You know what sucks? Because of our unwillingness to pass policy that protects our election integrity, I immediately think the Green Party votes tonight are Russian meddling.
Wow, my answer to her question was going to be, you're acting.
Why else would anyone cast a protest vote in Ohio where there's so much at stake?
Yeah.
I guess our advice to Alyssa would be the same that we gave right about this time yesterday to all of the Rosie O'Donnell Broadway Russian annex, whatever the people is it still going on? It was going for 22 days. Is it still going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw her do an interview on CNN. So apparently she took a break for a while.
Rosie. Okay. Well, our a point to them is then you should be behind us.
Yeah,
you should be. And by the way, no response. We've never got any response on that. We've never got response from not one Democrat. No one out there. I mean, not email, not Twitter, nowhere where they have said we are behind you. But for different reasons, we believe that Trump colluded with the Russians, and we want to see all the FBI and Department of Justice files. We would say the same thing to Alyssa Milano.
Right?
Are you behind us then? She says, because of our willingness to pass policy that protects our election integrity, I immediately think the Green Party votes tonight are Russian meddling. Well, if you still believe, again, that as we told you, the majority of Democrats still believe that the Russians got into the election machines and changed the vote count. Never happened.
Right.
There is no story that has made that allegation. There's not a governor that has made that allegation. There's not a voting district that has made that allegation. Still yet, the majority of Democrats believe that. Now it's gone down a little bit since earlier this year, which is good. But if you do believe it and you believe that Trump was involved in it, as the protesters do, as apparently Alyssa Milano believes the Republicans were involved in it, then you should be exactly where we stand and you should be demanding. And we keep repeating this over and over again, and we can't get Democrats to stand with us on this. And we can only surmise that they're hypocrites and liars on it. Because otherwise they'd be screaming louder than Trump supporters are to release it, correct?
That's the idea.
To release the information
Why would you not be calling for that? I mean, if you're going to be, you know, if there's some kind of call to action, aside from the generic impeach this man and put him in prison. It's funny, we can identify the crime with Hillary. No call for them to do that with her. There's been no crime identified with Trump, and the calls haven't stopped. But when you look at that process of call to action, should be what? You start at the beginning. You start at something that is very real. Release the DOJ information. Why aren't they out in front of Adam Schiff's house?
We would think that they would be
instead
on our
of the White
side.
House.
Because what do you want?
Right.
As we have said, you're protesting for what? What action do you wish the government to
start the process? And the process would start with, because if you believe he did it, and Adam Schiff believes he did it, he's guilty, the president or somebody in his campaign, then start the process. If you believe he's not a legitimate president, then call for the Department of Justice to release all of those documents to show the American people. That will build almost immediate, if it's true. It's not, by the way, and this is the point. It would build immediate, but if they believe it's true, it would build immediate
willpower for impeachment. I'm going to play ignorant here and say I don't know that.
Exactly.
In order to encourage them, I don't know what the FBI and Department of Justice is hiding. Remember, they are. I even gave the Democrats a great excuse. Remember, the FBI and the Department of Justice is under Trump. Mm-hmm. Maybe the conspiracy theory is it's Trump keeping them from releasing stuff.
Right. Yeah, of course. Adam Schiff is protecting Trump.
Adam Schiff is protecting Trump. Yes.
Yes. That's right.
By the way, I loved your. And it wasn't what you said, it's how you said it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure they are.
Yeah. Right. That's because he's either protecting Democrats or he's protecting, well, the Republican Party, which would really be, if this is all about Trump. Adam Schiff is either protecting the left or the right. He's either protecting the president or he's protecting someone else.
Right. And so we don't understand why Democrats aren't on our side to have the FBI and the Department of Justice have full transparency so we know what Trump and his campaign did. And the only way that you can find that out is to is to declassify the FISA application, the 302s that went along with it, the justification, the FBI's explanation of why we know that this intelligence that we are giving you, why we know that this information is accurate, so you can go after Trump. Why aren't you behind us on it? How many times do we have to ask this question? It's not complicated. You're screaming that you believe he did something. The only way we can find that out is by releasing what the FBI and the Department of Justice has. And yes, you're not screaming for it. And you're not screaming at Adam Schiff to do it. Why not? What is it that Eric and I are missing? See, I'm even giving the benefit of the doubt that we're missing something.
Yeah. Well, got to be something we haven't seen, right?
In other news, negotiations about an interview between President Trump and Special Counsel Robert Mueller seem to be down near the end. This is from thehill.com. Mm. According to Rudy Giuliani, he told The Hill on Tuesday afternoon, the president's lawyer did not slam the door on the idea of such an interview, insisting that, quote, we're not giving them a straight turn down, end of quote. He said that the Trump team was not going to agree to everything Mueller's team wanted, but stressed, I hope it is in the realm of debatable and negotiable. Asked about a letter that the Trump team was reportedly preparing in relation to the special counsel's request for an interview, Giuliani said, we're writing it. It will be done tomorrow, or in the worst-case scenario, it will be done on Thursday. The question of whether Trump will consent to an interview with Mueller's team is one of the most critical surrounding the special counsel's 15-month probe. Giuliani told Robert Costa of the Washington Post on Monday that he had a real reluctance about allowing any questions about obstruction. Well, as we said, lay out the obstruction allegation.
Yeah.
We're talking about obstruction. What's the allegation of obstruction?
Yes.
You're saying obstruction. What's the allegation?
And if you're, I mean, because what rises to it? What rises to the level of obstruction?
Right. For example, to use another case out there, people say, well, Hillary, well, we knew what the crime was.
Yeah.
We can identify in the law what the specific allegation of the laws broken were. Mm-hmm. And we have many times. We've gone right to the sentence of the different laws, of the allegation of the laws that she broke. We're simply asking the same courtesy for the president,
right?
That's what Giuliani's saying. Give us the same courtesy that you give everybody else. Negotiations have been heating up since March when Mueller's team suggested it could subpoena the president if he did not submit to an interview. Trump has been widely reported to favor giving an interview, apparently believing that he will be able to persuade Mueller that he has done nothing wrong. The president's lawyers and others in his orbit are skeptical, fearing that Trump could be walking into what they call a perjury trap.
Well, that's my concern, because it's not what he would say during the interview. It's what he would say in the interview compared to things he's said in the public and things he's tweeted.
Well, not only that, but other people's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
because that many times you're not able to prove who's right. It's just the jury believes one person over another, even though there's no direct evidence of it. In his Tuesday afternoon interview with The Hill, Giuliani expanded on the perjury trap idea, contending that the special counsel's team seemed more inclined to believe former FBI Director James Comey than the president. He did not state his reason for holding that opinion.
Right. Well, I think it would be just because Mueller has had greater experience working directly with James Comey. They know each other better.
Yes.
And the whole this being politically motivated thing. There's that. But that's exactly why if I were his attorneys, no, there's not going to be any interview. Not going to happen.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Robert in Ocean City, New Jersey. Robert, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Two quick things. The first thing is there are two chances of him sitting down with Mueller and Slim is out of town. The second thing, you know the answer to the question you keep asking. They don't want this to end. They're going to keep telling you there's an ongoing investigation. This is their revenge for Ken Starr. That's all this is.
Well, the fact that it's an ongoing investigation, we've already handled that many times, which is why we really haven't got that from a Democrat stating that, because there isn't just one investigation. The executive branch investigation is one investigation with the special counsel. The House Intelligence Committee and the House Judiciary Committee have separate investigations going on, as does the Senate Judiciary Committee. Their investigations are just as legit and on equal grounds with anybody else's investigation.
Yeah.
So they have a right. They have a right to get the information that they want. And as we have said, make it much more. Make it bipartisan. If the allegation comes in, they're cherry picking. Then fine. Then let the Democrats release what they wish to release.
Yep.
Release all the pertinent information so the American people can decide. The Democrats can't argue that point. They may still say, well, it's an ongoing investigation. No, that's only one investigation that's going on. The Mueller investigation does not take precedent in the Constitution over any other investigation.
No, it does not.
There's multi-investigations going on. All of them under the Constitution are viewed as credible. Not one is viewed as an investigation with more integrity or more importance than another.
Well, and at some point, the president is going to have to. I mean, I don't know if basically not doing anything, how that's going to affect him in the midterms, if at all. Does he feel that pressure, I guess is the question, to actually do something and declassify this information himself?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.